This is supposed to be sort of a nuts and bolts type session. So I asked Henry if he would join me, and I'll just give a quick, you've already heard me introduce myself, so I'll just give you a quick overview of what my role is at my church back home, and then I'll let Henry introduce himself, since you haven't really heard from him as of yet. My title is Chief Musician. Sort of like that title, it's very biblical, and sort of implies that I'm not just the director. I'm sort of the chief leader. I have to lead out, and so my role has been to come alongside Parish Presbyterian Church as they planted a daughter church about 4.5 years ago. And when they first asked me to come alongside them, I said, well, I don't think so. My touring career was just flowering. I was busy. It had changed from me trying to get gigs to people calling me and like the schedule filling out, and yet I looked around me and saw that my family was tired. We were tired of living, you know, we had just had another baby, so 6 people in a motorhome traveling the country with no home base other than the home I grew up in, my mom and dad's home in southern Illinois, and we decided, you know, there's just not another drawer for another baby, and it's time. So it progressed and eventually went from, you know, no to part-time to yes, full-time. I think this is where the Lord is leading us now. And so since then, I've been very privileged to write, to, you know, from week to week, choose songs, direct worship, have influence in the scriptures we choose in worship and so forth. And that's been a great joy. So that's my role. And since then, I have become ordained as an elder. So my role as chief musician has really been sort of put to part-time chief musician and part-time pastoral work. So I end up in the hospital a lot. When I spoke earlier this morning and
not
said,
not because you hurt yourself a lot.
Not because I hurt myself a lot, right. But I've ended up there. I've heard weak voices give just amazing statements of praise that I could never come up with myself. So I love being in that role, and but that leaves a little bit of a gap, and that brings us to Henry. So Henry, introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a little bit about your role at Parish.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and apologize right now. I'm not much of a talker. I'm a fiddle player, so so forgive me if I say something silly sounding. How I got to Parish is a little bit of an interesting story myself. I'm a classical musician by trade. That's what I trained to do. That was my career path, where I saw myself going anyway, and I guess to some extent still do. I grew up in Franklin, though, and the pastor there at Parish Presbyterian also happened to, he's very involved in education, and so he founded the school where I went to high school, so I knew a lot of the people involved in that church before it even existed. And they were very influential in my life, and I'd always sort of hoped at some point to, as I went off to school and trained and got jobs elsewhere, and you know, my goal was to get back home at some point and to be able to be a part of that community one more time. And at that time, the chief musician was a guy named Greg Wilbur, and he and I had kept up over the years. He was a big mentor to me. And in 2010, I was just out of grad school, and I was taking auditions, looking for jobs, and I was needing a way to support myself, and wasn't really coming up with a whole lot. And by the Lord's good providence, Greg called up, and I was like, hey, you know, we're looking for an intern. Would you have any interest at all in coming back home? And it was like, yes, I do, I really do. And I've had the privilege of working under Greg and now Nathan, and learned a lot from them, and I just assist them in whatever they need to do, if that's what you were looking for, right?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Great.
Yeah, okay.
His role has shifted really from being an intern to being more of a director, and that increases, it seems, each month. In fact, another thing that is really on my plate a lot is I'm co-chair on the committee of a building campaign, and so I've learned so much more about site maps than I've ever wanted to in my life recently, and we're expanding, where we're busting at the seams, and we need to expand to a field adjacent to us, and that takes an inordinate amount of time. But because of that, Henry has really been directing the musical aspect of our worship service more and more. And he's been a godsend, literally, these last few years. So with that, that's a quick introduction of where we come from. We'll try to express a bit more about how we construct worship and what it looks like at Parish here in just a bit. But I would love to hear just very quickly, how many Presbyterians are here? Okay, so most, how many Baptists? A few, good, all right. You're still welcome. And what other denominations do we have? Anything? Acts 29 networks, so okay, very good. Bible church type approach to things. E-free, yes, it does count. Is that a denomination? I think it's a confederation denomination sort of thing. That's wonderful, thank you. How many musicians in the crowd? Wow, great. You don't have to be really good, no. Just musicians, you play a little bit. And how many of you help at your team or are the musician at your church? Wow, fair number. Okay, great. So a lot of musicians. Guitarists. Okay, pianists. Other instruments, shout them out. Viola, tuba, flugelhorn, mandolin, tambourine, excellent. Okay, great. So we have a smattering of probably skill levels, instruments, all sorts of things here. That's great. How many classically trained? Okay, a smaller number. And the rest of us are hacks, I take it. That's good. Okay,
Or rock and rollers.
Rock and rollers, that's right. I learned on a Strat. Yeah. The Fish That Got Away was a 1952 Esquire. It was a great guitar. Oh, well. Okay. So that's good. I just wanted to get a sense of who's here. How many worship leaders, like you're in charge of picking songs and directing the music, and I know that worship leader is just our cultural term. I know that worship is the whole thing, as I expressed earlier, but how many are leading music? Raise your hands high. So, good. And how many of those leaders are pastors? Two. Okay. So you're directing both the scriptural and musical elements of the service. All right, very good. So we have almost everything represented in this small group.
That's awesome.
That's great. So what I'd like to do now is, one more question for you all. How many, I want to get a sense of worship styles. How many contemporary? Okay, and blended is one of the things. So anybody just traditional? Anybody just contemporary? One just traditional, okay. Almost, sort of. Anybody just contemporary? So everybody is sort of a blend, it sounds like to me. At least to a certain degree. Can I what?
Defined.
You know, that's tough. I actually don't like those words. I understand some of the hesitation with your hands. I get that. Generally speaking, when people say in America traditional, they're thinking singing out of the hymnal. Generally speaking, when we think contemporary, we think screen and no printed music. I realize that there's all kinds of stylistic issues that could, you can sing holy, holy, holy on a screen with no printed music, but that's so ingrained in hymnody, I would still call that traditional, although your style with a screen and printed, it starts to lean towards a blended thing. I understand these things really mesh, but the church I grew up in, we had the Trinity hymnal, the Trinity Psalter, and a bulletin. And we were not a media church. The media was like paper. Have you seen the advertisement for the book? It's like the response time is immediate. It's the book. We used a book and growing up. And so how many use a band, like a full band, drums and all? Okay, how many are like piano only? Anybody organ? Good. Okay, great. Still, we have quite a range. That's wonderful. I would like to set the theme for our discussion. And by the way, Later on, we'll have Q&A, but I don't mind if we get a little interaction here as well, okay? Because your questions may jog our memories. This is really extemporaneous more than anything. So here's the theme. I believe that my role as chief musician, that Henry's role as sort of, his title is director of music right now, our role in our church, other than being a congregant and an elder and that sort of thing, but our role is to support congregational worship. If you're also a pastor, that extends to more areas than what we're discussing right here. I understand that. But as musicians, as what is traditionally called a worship leader, and maybe I can try to start using the term song leader, music director. I don't really know how to do that, but the bow down leader. a new term. Okay, so as our role is to support congregational worship. It's more than being an accompanist. It's not just being the lead worshiper, which is a very common idea that's often talked about more in contemporary circles. That's a great concept, and yet it's more than that. There are times when I'm not fully engaged in what I would call heartfelt worship, where I'm thinking, okay, it's time to slow this thing down, it's getting out of hand, or it's time to be louder on my right hand, it's time to dig in on the guitar. I'm thinking technically in order to deal with the fact that we've got this wide, shallow room back at Parrish, and the other side of the room is getting off. My brain, I try to keep tabs on what's happening, and my brain is back and forth to wonderful theological concept in this hymn that we're singing to. It's time to make this turnaround happen because I've lost the rhythm or whatever. And so our role is to really be thinking about supporting the congregation in worship. I know that's not the only thing, but that's what I'm going to focus on in this 35 minutes or so. Does that make sense? Not really profound, but I think it helps us gauge where we're going to take the conversation, at least, and I think it helps us do our job well.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm going to ask Henry some questions. He says he's not a talker, but he can talk. And I'm going to ask him a little bit, and you'll get a sense of what we do, how we interact from week to week, and you'll also get a sense of our worship service back home. So let me see what I want to start with. Let's begin with... let's begin with staff,
okay.
Working with staff. So, Henry, how do we, as a staff, we've got George Grant as a pastor, we've got an assistant pastor, Cam Clousing, and then I'm chief musician, you're music director. We've also got a secretary. We're a church of 300, just to give you a sense of where we are. How do you interact with the staff? How do we know what we're going to be planning, and where do we take it from there?
Well, usually every Monday or Tuesday we have a staff meeting where we get together and recap the previous Sunday and what went well, what didn't go well, and then usually the starting for the planning of the next Sunday begins with the pastor. He will he sends us a little an outline of where he's going with the sermon, what the passage is, perhaps some of the readings that he'd like to read from. And the key themes of what he wants to communicate with his sermon, or at least where he at that point in the week where he thinks he's going to go with the sermon, and then so we try to extract. You and I usually will either get together, talk on the phone or something like that after the meeting about what pieces of music fit here, what goes with this particular theme, what do we want to bring out, if there's a lot of different songs, we need to hone this theme in so that all the music, all the readings, the sermon and everything communicates everything's on the same page, they're connected, they're driving at the same point.
So what I'm hearing, I'm sort of being the interviewer here, so what I'm hearing is you try to avoid just your favorite song because you like it.
Exactly.
You're attempting to do something that is unified.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What do you emphasize most? Theological? And this is when I say you, this is we talk this out from
yes.
week to week, but do you emphasize the immediate scripture that we're responding to? How do you go through your thought process of picking a particular song?
Yes. The answer is all of those. Yes. It just depends. There are, if there's a big overarching theological point, you're going to want to choose something that relates to that. If depending on where something is in the service, if we're doing a piece of music right after a confession of sin, for example, I don't know how liturgical or how non-liturgical your services may be. Ours is somewhat formal. So every week we have after the sermon we'll do a confession of sin. Well, at that point, maybe a big triumphant march like hymn wouldn't really be appropriate there. You want something a little more meditative. Whereas at the end of the service, where we're responding joyfully after having confessed our sins, after communion, after the sermon. Then maybe we do. We don't want something quiet and interior there. We want something bold to send us out. Mm-hmm. And that there's all sorts of things to relate to. But you just have to be intentional with how you're placing your music, I think.
Yeah. We also try to pay attention to a context. So sometimes, though the sermon may be, say, on mercy, let's take just a big concept. Maybe George, the pastor, is really going to be focusing in on God's mercy in this particular passage. Well, that passage may also have lots of material on creation. And so we don't necessarily pick, we have 11 songs, generally speaking, in our worship service. Some of those are very short, some are the full hymn, some are just two or three verses. So we don't pick 11 songs on mercy. And some subjects, like if you're dealing with Melchizedek, you're going to have to sing the same song 11 times in a row, because I've only found one hymn that deals with has Melchizedek in it. So what we do is here's the supporting context. Psalm 8, for example. Yeah. We were just chatting about this.
You were preaching, so the session you heard earlier this morning was originally, at least as far as I know, right? Mm-hmm. Was originally a sermon from July. And so you were preaching that week, so I put together a lot of the music. And so one of the things that struck me when I was reading through the psalm and seeing what Nathan had said about it was all of the creation imagery, the natural world, the heavens, and so I chose things like For the Beauty of the Earth, hymns like that. That's not the central point. The central point of that psalm is Christ, but. But there are other things too hidden, and so trying to create a unified feel that all relates back to the sermon text.
This concept that we're talking about right now is clearly not difficult, and it's probably something you engage in from week to week. I think one of the things, however, that makes at least it makes me appreciate our service so much is the attention to detail, though. Henry will notice if I've picked a song just to fill out the spot. It's like, what does that song have to do with this? I'm like, well, it was. I just needed an upbeat song, and I can get lazy. You can get lazy, right? And so it's really good if you are able to work in a team where someone has the ability to critique your choices, and you have a rapport with that person. It is incredibly invaluable. Pastors. George and myself and Henry, we end up chatting these things out to the degree that there's specificity in almost every piece of music that we choose relating to something. It may not be on the sermon theme if we're responding to confession or responding to assurance or responding, we loosely follow the church calendar. So usually our introit, and that's one verse of a hymn, our introit has to do we're in Kingdom Tide right now, which is not a real commonly followed church calendar thing anyway. But our introits have to do with the King of Kings. We'll use the same introit a few weeks in a row and then move to another hymn that has to do with the King of Kings or his kingship or lordship in some way. And oftentimes we'll use the benediction as a bookend, that same hymn later on in the sermon. So we have Jesus shall reign, da 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 da. And then the last song is bum ba da da. So it sort of bookends the service. That's nice musically as well as thematically. All right, so that's sort of our staff. If you don't have a staff, find another person that's interested. Work with that person. Mm-hmm. Find that person that can tell you that's a really bad idea, and you can hear that from that person. And don't put up your guard and that's a really good idea. Maybe you have a reason for it. Once in a while, I'll say, no, Henry, I was thinking of this verse in that song. That's what I'm going to emphasize in the worship notes that I write for the back of the bulletin. And he'll say, oh, okay, that fits. I see it now. Yeah. So you have a discussion, and you work those things out. Yes, sir. Yeah, there are. That's good. We use those a couple tools every week. Our own database, which is full of PDFs and Finale files. By the way, we use Finale every week. Henry's in Finale constantly. I used to be in Finale constantly, but he's better, and he makes it pretty. So we print.
For those that don't know what that is, that's a music notation software. There's two sort of industry standard ones, Finale and Sibelius. And Finale is sort of the most commonly used, so that's what we work with.
Yeah.
And those can be easily form. And this is nerdy now, but like you can easily take those and then import them into image files and then print those out. And the pieces of music that you have in your bulletin right now for the conference are from that database. So he left.
So this is our bulletin, and I'm just going to hold it up. We print one color on the front. We have a fast duplicator that prints one color, and the rest of it is black and white. It's 12 pages. It's just legal paper folded, and you'll notice all the music is printed. So we pull from a database full of PDFs and Finale files, and we only print the verses that we sing. So it's very seamless. I really suggest considering something like that, or using a hymnal, if you use a screen, that I understand that, and yet there's something wonderful about constructing just the verses you want. I mean, we will pick verses out of a hymn based on theme and theological concepts and scripture we're responding to and so forth.
And maybe, only one verse of a song really works there, but that one really works and the rest of it don't. You don't want to sing the whole song.
Right. So we'll turn that into a response instead of a full hymn. So tools, let me just to finish off the question. Basically, we use our database, and I use hymnary.org.
Hymnary.org is great.
The Trinity Hymnal, the Trinity Psalter, the 1912 Psalter, the Psalters, hymn books, good hymn books. Once in a while, the Contus Christi, is that how you pronounce that? I have a Methodist hymnal on my bookshelf. I think I've used it once, but it's great just to have those resources there. And then what happens is Henry ends up notating something if it's not in our database, so that we can have it in a very flexible form. It's work, if you print, it's worth the work.
It's labor intensive, but it is the advantages of the it has the sort of the flexibility that you have with the screen, but the richness that hymnals can include.
And by the way, this costs probably 20 cents a copy. We've gotten the cost really down. It's less than buying hymnals for a large church by far for several years. Mm-hmm. One question, yes, sir. Each staff meeting, the first portion of our staff meeting, other than prayer, is, okay, how was Sunday? So we go through an evaluative period, and we'll chat for half hour. We liked this. This really flopped. The new Psalm of the Month, I think it's really great, but it's really hard. You have to figure out how to teach that better. Those sorts of comments. And then once we're out of staff meeting, as Henry mentioned, we get George's worship worksheet, which has a lot of his scriptures, the direction he's going with his sermon, key words, key themes, that sort of thing. And then really it's just me and Henry talking through what we've just been talking about, looking at all those elements and batting it around until we come to a conclusion. Does that answer? Yes, ma'am.
Exactly, yeah.
That bulletin has been in some, it's not right now, but for some seasons in family worship, we just take it home. That's what we use that week.
Yeah. And a lot of people do.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. I've seen people three-hole punch them, and they've got folders on there. they've got. I mean, it's really a theological compendium over years. It becomes a theological and worship compendium. It's pretty incredible. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Every week, you can download it as a PDF.
They're posted sometimes. They're posted usually between Thursdays and and Saturdays.
If I remember to send it to the guys, post them.
Okay, so let's keep rolling here. A few more. I want to cover a little bit here because we've had some questions and milling about that I want to get to. Let's talk a little bit about. This is an advertisement for really considering a tool like a bulletin. In a sense, but let's talk about layout. Mm-hmm. Henry's sort of the aesthetic guy. He loves it to look just right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about rhythms and range. Let's talk about pages.
Sure.
And,
yeah. Well, if it goes back to really what you wanted the central theme of this hour to be is the goal of us as musicians for the church is to support the people's singing. Musically, at least, that's what the goal is. It's not primarily to make a beautiful performance, although hopefully that will happen too. It's not about making new songs look how great songwriters we are or something. It's about getting the congregation to sing and support them in that. And so everything you do in your planning, this has to be the first principle that you go through whenever anything you're thinking about. So everything down from are we choosing things that are familiar? Because if everything is new, if you've not heard any of these songs, that's going to be really hard for the congregation to sing. So you have to have a balance between old and new. Because if it's everything, you sing the same 10 songs every week, well, then you get stale, and so people kind of check out. So it's good to have a balance of new and old. The way things look on the page, that's kind of my hobby horse. But there are a lot. Even a lot of hymnals actually kind of bug me with the way they sort of break up the phrases and the lines aren't natural. Whereas if you were setting that for, I play in an orchestra, and if our librarian comes back with parts that look like that, we'd send them back and say no, get these to where they look right so I can play them correctly. Obviously, things like range, what key you choose to, something may sound great for a particular instrument, but if this puts the melody at a lot of high E's and F's, your congregation isn't going to sing along with that.
We have, if Henry was just doing whatever he wanted to do, we'd be singing C, D's, and F's all day long, and I would be left out of worship. And another friend of ours who's a bass and leads worship, we've had the comment that the worship service is a bit drab. Well, they have beautiful songs, mm-hmm. but it's all keyed for bass singers. And what's happening is it's really gravitating to where he's comfortable rather than the congregation, where the congregation needs to be, somewhere where it works for the most people. Yeah. And that's if it were me, I'd be in the basement most Sunday mornings because it's easier to sing. But then he'd be left out. Yes. That's a really good question, and the answer to that is probably not just as easy as you might. I'd love to have a silver bullet for you, but learning parts, learning to lean on different types of singers. I can tell just from your question, you have a more of an alto voice. If there isn't somebody else singing, you know, I think you have some leeway. You can drop it some.
Okay.
You can simply drop it some.
There's certain sort of guidelines that you can think. I mean, you don't really want to go in a melodic line. A G is probably, you don't really want to go that low. Mm-hmm. So like A is probably below the truss staff and the treble clef. But much more than a D, an occasional high E is okay if it's in the right spot, but much more than a D, you don't really want to go higher than that. That's kind of, at least in my mind, what I think of as a comfortable range for most singers.
Yeah. I try to keep things between A and D. And if we're going to sing an E, it's like, da da da, not da 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 da. If you're hanging up there, the thing needs to be pitched down. Yeah. It's just difficult. Even some songs that are just hang around B and C a lot, if they're all there, it becomes difficult. And then we have an argument about how far we should pitch it down.
Well, and honestly, that's even another thing you can think about is placement in the service. Mm-hmm. By the end of the service, everybody's kind of warmed up. You've woken up. You've had your coffee a little bit. So you can probably have a little more leeway on the high side. Whereas, and the same is true in the reverse at the beginning of the service. At least.
We've actually had that discussion. Mm-hmm. Well, let's put that song at the beginning because it's lower. This song at the end because it's higher. It's still getting the theme across. It's good to consider practical issues. It's good to consider logistics. So it's not a simple answer, but I find the balance and play with it.
And there are certain songs that may I think another important thing you need to think about is who your personnel is, who's singing. Maybe don't take every song and pitch it lower, but gravitate towards pieces of music that fit your voice because you're the one that has to do the leading. Maybe there are just certain songs that you want to leave out because I can't lead that very well. I think of it more stylistically rather than technically. But
also, I've taken some songs that have jumps, vocal inflections that are simply not all that congregational, that are difficult for the congregation. And put them in. We have a communion time where a solo piece would work, where it's not, just a highlight on the singer. We're sort of off to the side, a little bit like this, but even more so. And so, something that's more technically difficult can be done by a single person or two people. Those are good considerations. And I'd like to get to discussing the musicians that you have at home. But one more comment on this issue of having a bulletin, something that can be taken home, or having your hymnals both in the church and encouraging people to buy the hymnals and take them home. Mm-hmm. What we do on a Sunday morning eventually should impact what we do in our homes, and that should impact our culture. So part of this theme, supporting congregational worship, the ulterior motive, that's not the right phrase for it, but one of the goals is to see what we do on a Sunday morning affect how we live through the week.
A byproduct.
It's
something else. It's maybe not the central purpose, but it's a good thing mm-hmm. that comes out of this.
Why don't we read music anymore as a culture? Why? I'm asking specifically, why don't we read? Because we have screens with no music. The screen is great. I'm not knocking the screen in this church, okay? Please don't hear me incorrectly, because it's a very useful tool. We have really low ceilings, and so it wouldn't work in our church, but we don't read music. That's why. We would read music if we read music. And for those folks that think, well, I don't read music, I've noticed over and over and over again, those folks that have come up to me and said, yeah, I was monotone. I can't read. But then you'll notice them looking at the hymns, and the first time out, they're getting the rhythms right. They've picked up. White notes are longer, and black notes are shorter, and it goes up, and it goes down, and they listen to their neighbor, and pretty soon they're reading music. We train our culture, and we've untrained our culture to read. And so that's a byproduct of the excellence that the church can offer our culture.
I mean, music, this is okay. I'm gonna get really nerdy on you, but I didn't even think about this. But music notation was invented, and historically speaking, you know, notated music, what we have, you know, in front of you in your books, like that is a uniquely Western invention. You know, other cultures across the world that have things that are similar, but not nearly to the level of precision that we have in the West, and that's because of the church. Particularly in the Middle Ages, when there was a need to standardize liturgies and things like this, and that's how music notation was invented, and it's it's ours. So we need to claim that.
Mm-hmm. It is the church's gift to the world. Okay, so one of the most difficult questions, and your question about vocal range gets at it. Henry, this is the tough one.
Okay. So you're giving it to me?
So in Nashville, we have a lot of great musicians. We are very blessed. We just do. I mean, we're here tomorrow. So we have a classically trained violist and the chief musician gone from our church tomorrow. And tomorrow the music's going to be great. We have a pianist, and we've got a classically trained violinist and another violinist that's been classically trained, and she's excellent too. And then a bass player who's an incredible, great rock player that also knows how to read and play jazz, and he can play hymns, and he's just awesome. And the congregation won't miss a beat when we're gone. So we're very blessed. So when someone comes up and says, well, you know, we have this team, and the flautist hasn't played in 10 years, but she started up again, and we have a beginning guitar player, and our mandolin player has 3.5 chords down so far. And, you know, what do we do? What do we do? So first of all, let me give you a concept that I think should influence how we answer this question. When I came to parish, my goal was to not wow the congregation with what I could bring to worship. When I came to parish, Greg Wilbur, a great musician, was leading. And he has a particular style on the piano. Just going to a guitarist was going to be enough of a change for our congregation. So what did I do the first year? I tried to pick all the songs that he was picking. In fact, I picked the exact same songs that he was picking for the first 2 months. We got together and said, what songs are you picking? I'm picking the same thing. We used the same passages. We did this church plant thing where we were working in tandem. And even once we weren't picking the same music, I picked more minor songs than I would have because Greg sings, he picks a lot of minor tunes. I pitched things down. I pitched things up. I did things that Greg would do because I respect him and I respected the culture that I walked into.
Yeah, you'd walked into somewhere that had an established heritage and,
right.
And a particular mode. And
my goal was to have the comment a year later by someone that says, I didn't know we changed musicians. And I actually got that comment. It's like, yes, you know, that's wonderful. Now, since then, we've begun to change our culture some according to what our congregational needs are. But let that comment influence how we think about young musicians, working an organist in with a jazz drummer. I mean, I worked at a Village 7 for 7 weeks. They asked me to come in and say, would you help us mesh this group? Literally, an excellent organist, a guitarist that knew 6 chords, 7 chords, a jazz drummer, a punk rock bass player, a classical pianist that was out of this world good and couldn't improvise a note, a 50-member choir that's used to doing sort of big anthem-type things, and they wanted to mesh this together. What a challenge. Now, they had good musicians, but they also had some beginners. Henry, what do we do? How do we think about the people we're working with from week to week? I tossed you the hard one.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that.
Well, know your culture.
Yeah, you need to know who your people are. So if play to their strengths. It's like I was saying about the vocal range question. If you've got a pianist who loves the old time like Baptist hymns and maybe you don't want to pick a lot of music that's gonna like sort of like this that has a lot of lead sheets. Maybe that's not to her strength. Maybe and vice versa. If you've got a young guitarist, maybe we don't pick a really complex Bach hymn arrangement because that's gonna be beyond his skill level.
Also using musicians well. In that particular context, I asked the organist very kindly, very nicely, because he was obviously excellent, to think like a bass player. Let's take this holy, holy thing, hymn, and turn it into a three-chord song for the first verse. And let's let the guitarist take the first verse with a classical pianist, and let's turn this into a 1-4-5 chord hymn. And then by the second verse, the guitarist is gonna be there a little bit stronger and let him get a little more strummy. But I didn't shy back from saying, "Hey, guitarist, let's not do this. Let's not be a hi-hat all the way through the song." You know, be willing to create relationships enough to say, "I think musically speaking, it'd be good if we didn't all play so much." You have to be willing. I mean, Henry has to say, "You know, I don't think that works on the piano to me." I was like, "Oh, okay, I'll go back to my main instrument on the guitar." Mm-hmm. I have to be willing to hear that. He has to be willing to say that. You have to start creating relationships with your musicians. Musicians are funny people. They're really finicky and they're easily offended. Create relationships with your musicians so that I can say to Henry, "That's too much viola. Let's have some more space." And he's classically trained, but he knows me. He knows I love him, and he's not going to go, "Oh, folk guitarist."
You know what? It's
so important to create relationships, know your people, and then play to their strengths. So I asked that organist, "Play the bass note. Play the other bass note. Play the other bass note. Play the four. Back to the one. Then sneak in the melody, still doing that. And then the third verse, guitarist, you're not going to be able to hang with this because we're going to do a different arrangement and we're going to change keys and we're going to go this way. And drummer, you don't need to do your whole set. All we need is some rolling of cymbals." Start thinking about how do you direct musicians. Do you need a mandolin chopping all the way through every single "Are You With Him"? No, you actually don't. No, what?
I think another important thing too is you know, especially those of you who are in charge, it's okay to say that. You know,
it so is okay.
Sometimes I know a lot of times, as a musician, you're used to, you know, if I'm in the orchestra, the conductor, you know, he tells you what to do, and that's okay. So it's sometimes a little leadership and a little direction is important to give, and if you have that relationship, you know that they're going to take that as direction and not as squashing your hopes and dreams. Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, in this case at Village 7, all of a sudden the guitarist was not hitting his guitar to try to keep up with the volume of the organ. Mm-hmm. They're just different instruments, so treat them differently.
Question back here?
Yes. Same with vocalists. I ask my vocalists on a regular basis. I have one vocalist that will sing like this at the top of her lungs. And I don't have really well-trained sound guys to be able to go whoop and pull her down. So I say things like this a lot. At least about a fist away is the most natural place for your voice. Yes, you can sound like God right here. But that's not what the congregation needs. You're here to support the worship of the congregation. Give them a natural tone. Get some tips. If you don't know how to work a sound system, pay the $200 and have somebody come in and train you and show you how to use a mic. And then listen, if they say put the microphone on chin, then the settings on the board need to be different. Work with your situation, or build a new church that doesn't need a sound system. But we usually have two vocalists. And oftentimes they're mismatched. One has a very quiet voice. One has a loud voice. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I ask them to pull back. Like, I'll literally say, "Roseanne, can you pull back a little bit and let Amanda come out?" I'll do that during rehearsal on a Sunday morning. Once again, if you don't have a relationship with that person, that's really difficult to say because you've just offended them. Relationships with your team is so important. But I will direct volume.
What about maybe on a broader sense, in the same, knowing your context as relates to style and what the culture of your church is at that point?
Yeah, good question. So I often get the question, how many hymns do you do? How many contemporary songs do you do? How many, what's your breakup? Our breakdown, you may have a better sense to this, but we do, 50% hymns? 30% psalms? 20% other stuff like my stuff?
I would say it varies from week to week.
Yeah, right? It does vary.
So it's hard to say. Yeah, I'd say 50% traditional things, mm-hmm. and probably 40% things that you or Greg or something that has been composed in our congregation, mm-hmm. and then maybe 10% some other contemporary, mm-hmm. some of the really mm-hmm. good
like yeah, that. I would encourage us to lean on those solid hymns of the faith. I mean, there's a good 150, 200 just solid hymns of the faith that should be in our repertoire. Let me say this. I don't want to say a ton about modern retuning because I think I really applaud that effort. But I think we need to be careful with how much we do. It's really valuable to have the hymns of the faith with tunes that we know and have always known, or at least have known for 400 years. it's very valuable. Yes, we use my music, but I'm careful. I mean, Henry actually pushes to use more of my music than I do.
I always use more of his music.
But I'm very careful to make sure we're not just pushing my style and my agenda onto the congregation. Same with those that have come through perhaps RUF. It's a great experience through college, but does that mean your grandma's able to sing them? Probably not. Maybe. Maybe your grandma's hip. But yes. Actually, no. Do you? I'll take it that you do. So the question is, do we get lots of requests for particular songs or critiques? I'll once in a while get a sideways critique. Like, that was a really interesting song. Meaning, I didn't get it at all. That was really hard to sing. And I take that into account. I mean, I hope that we're able to train them and bring them along. I'm like, maybe my next Psalm of the Month shouldn't be in Lydian and have an odd rhythm and an odd meter, and I shouldn't be pushing quite that hard. So that's an extreme example, but it's good to pay attention. Back to the Henry's comment, know your people. Yeah. And if your people know the Baptist hymnal, there's no reason to throw out the Baptist hymnal. Yeah. It is your best friend. Use it. Use the best of what that hymnal has to offer. Oh, it's time, isn't it? Oh, we didn't get to the last thing. I don't advocate throwing out the old and going for the new. There's great new stuff. But the last thing I'd want to do is send you home with a frying pan, like Keith said, send you home with a frying pan ready to change the world. Your culture and your technical ability with the congregation and your musicians is very important. Okay, I'm going to take just a minute to cover this very quickly. Well, we did that a little bit. Consistency. Just a quick word on consistency and how that supports congregational worship. When we introduce a new Psalm of the Month, we'll do it for 4 weeks in a row, or five if the month is 5 weeks, just to be able to train them. That means by the end of that, they're a little bit sick of it, which means we drop it for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and then we bring it back to sort of set it into the mind, set it into the heart, and then we'll wait another 6 or 7 weeks and remember, oh, we should bring that one back, and we have that conversation a lot. Is it time to bring back Psalm 101? And we have a discussion, did that one really hit? Should it really be part of our repertoire? I mean, people sang it, but did it really work?
And sometimes you know, you try something new and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that doesn't need to be in our repertoire.
To Live as Christ, right over here, my CD. We're still singing 6 or 7 consistently off that CD. We've used all but one of them congregationally. If you're writing or you're using RUF retunes or using your own retunes, be willing to throw out 80% of what you do. Or not throw it out, but just let it slide. Let it be something people listen to in their cars. Not everything you do is all that important. my seminary prof used to say, find the sanctified trash can. Keep it there. So let's close out with just a reminder. Support congregational worship. And this session may have started to, you may start to think, I've got all kinds of questions now. Write them down. Don't forget them. Bring them to the Q&A session. I'd love to get to some of them. Once again, we don't have silver bullets that we'll just be able to give you and it's going to make your worship experience perfect. That's not the point here this weekend. The point is to get you to be thinking about how do we create a culture that affects both our church culture and that will then have the byproduct of affecting our homes and the culture at large. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.